Hello there, and welcome back to the Hiker Podcast. My name is Owen Hamilton. This is the show where we discuss all things hiking, walking, through hiking, and basically anything to do with exploring the outdoors by foot. So the winter has finally come here in Ireland. Autumn came and went in the blink of an eye. And while we start to layer up and get ready for those crispy mornings and brisk early winter winds, it's also a great time to reflect on the year that's passed. And what a year it's been. As many listeners will know, we launched a major update to the Hiker app this summer. And one major part of that update was providing our users with better quality maps for the regions that they're exploring. So, as you would guess, we were really excited to be able to add one of the most loved map makers in the UK, Harvey Maps. Well, on today's show, I speak to CEO of Harvey Maps, Adam King, about the history of the company and their place in the UK hill walking and outdoors community. We also explore Adam's own laser-focused path on to work in the outdoors industry, and we get a really good lesson on how one makes a map. But before we get into the interview, we have to pay the bills. This podcast is brought to you by Hiker, the most comprehensive mobile app for all those exploring the outdoors by foot. You can discover one of our 18,000 verified hiking routes from around the world. Or you can plan your own route and track it while using the best quality regional maps like Harvey Maps. We also have OS Maps, East-West Maps, USGS, Land Information New Zealand, and there's many more to come. The app is designed to enable hikers of all abilities to get outside and explore safely. So head over to your app store to download the app for free now, or head over to hiker.com, that's hiiker.com, to see for yourself. This one is for my fellow map nerds, my interview with Adam King. Around like that, I'm not going to go, I'm joined by you. I do all that afterwards. I do like an intro, and then
you can
just
edit the crap out, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It basically just edit me out of the entire conversation. So Adam, thanks for joining us on the show. It's an absolute delight. We've been speaking about having you on the podcast for a while now. Do you want to introduce yourself to the hiker audience? I'm sure lots of them definitely already know who you are, but
there's probably hundreds who don't, thousands who don't. So
your fans are listening.
I'll be the four employees next door probably. But, well, my name Adam King from Harvey Maps, current CEO. I've been in position for since January the 1st, 2020. So there was a crazy time to be taking over. We faced all sorts of stuff, as you can imagine. But work for a company. So Harvey Maps, we're based in Scotland, in the Central Belt, near a city called Stirling. For those of you that know it, if you don't, it's on the edge of the Loch Lomond and the Trossachs National Park. So there's about a team of about a dozen. And we've been in this little village called Doon, which has a famous castle, which is most people probably have seen in Outlander or Game of Thrones or something like that.
Oh, okay,
Or for the older listeners, it's Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh, which one? Which because
it's the scene when John Cleese is tapping his coconuts together, and they approach a castle, and that's Doon Castle.
So is that the one where the French are inside it?
Oh yeah, oh, God, I haven't seen it for ages. But it's
I'm trying to recall
the Knights Who Say Knee and all of that.
Yes, fantastic movie.
And when you come to the village, if you ever come through, the audio tour is given by the Monty Python guys. So So that's kind of the key attraction to the village of Doune, alongside Harvey Maps, obviously.
Yeah.
And we've been here since the early 80s, Owen. So we work in an old, I think it was told to me, it's a 17th century coaching inn. Oh. And it's rumoured to have a ghost. And one of my colleagues, Juliet, says she's seen this ghost. She's worked here for 30-odd years. So, and the building's changed over the years. As you can imagine, we've kind of, expanded and knocked down walls and joined rooms. And this very old building has become this sort of, it was described as high-tech, low ceilings. I think that's what it was called. So that's kind of, that's the sort of brief edges of the company and where we are. And the company's been, I should probably say, in existence since 1977.
Wow. Okay. And it was founded by a couple, if I'm right.
That's right. Yeah. So Susan and Robin Harvey, in a nutshell, the background is these two, both keen orienteers in the 70s, and both really good at orienteering, actually, competed in the World Championships. And there was a World Championships held in Aviemore in 1976, I want to say. So I wasn't even around on planet Earth at that point. So not until 79, that's when I arrived. But they were both really keen orienteers, and they were given the task of making a map for this event, because the existing maps at the time just weren't deemed suitable for the World Championships of orienteering. So they went away off. They went, made this map of the area, and it was kind of lauded as being a right success. So from that, it kind of snowballed a bit, and they said, "Well, can we make a living out of map making?" And they started to do some maps of recreational areas. I think the Howgill Fells in Yorkshire was one of the first areas, and the Isle of Arran, not far from us here. So, and from there, just kind of grew and grew and grew, and we're still in the same old building, and we just don't do the printing here now, thank God. That's the one thing. Back in the day, there was a huge old printing press that Susan used to operate for the very first maps.
Wow.
So because of the, things changed, things got a bit out of hand, we started being successful. So they got outsourced now. So we do everything here apart from the printing, which is good.
And I suppose that saves on the energy bills. And I'm sure the office is a little bit cooler as well throughout the day. Yeah. But in terms of we'll talk about Harvey Maps a little bit more. We'll discover the history of Adam King now in a few minutes. But the coverage of Harvey Maps, and also I suppose the lore around Harvey Maps, it seems to be very much like community led. Like everything that's around Harvey Maps, people who use Harvey Maps love Harvey Maps. Like they genuinely love their maps, which is obviously one of the key reasons why we now host Harvey Maps on our platform. Like we discover them ourselves, and we're like, these are fantastic maps. Not to go too marketing about this, but was that like a goal, or has that always been the way, or was this like something that rose up from grassroots, or is it something that you're like, oh, we want to take on OS maps, or how did it go away?
I think it's I think if you go right back to the start, when you're making maps for these for events, sort of maps for specific events, so there's already a really good community there that need good mapping. That's 30, 40 years ago. And so those people kind of grew up with the company, if you like. And then because we were able to move out into national parks and trail maps and all sorts of things now, any area in the UK and a few in Ireland as well, that where people want to go, I think there are certain, maybe a certain sort of person who just loves the outdoors. And when you've got a company with staff who want to do that in their spare time, it's kind of quite a nice blend. And so Yeah, it does come across as a real community, and I think the staff themselves, we feel like a bit of a community. You kind of we all have the outdoors right in us, and everyone who comes and works at Harvey Maps and loves the brand, loves what we're trying to do, loves the kind of science about it and the art that we do as well. So it's a bit of a blend of all sorts of things there. And I think the people who pick up our maps, and you know, we've spoken before, hopefully you enjoyed holding one and opening it. It feels a bit sort of magical in that sense. And it's no different, I might say, to how when I was a kid, you know, and I opened up the first Ordnance Survey map, and it was just this wonder of like, what is this thing? And I think we do the same today. You know, we obviously are really pleased. We wouldn't be talking if we hadn't got our maps onto digital devices, but there's something the community just loves, having these paper things to hold and look at, and it gets them up and down, and that community grows. I think that's
absolutely
in a sort of a brief summary, but it's always nice. We have a little shop here in Doon, and so you get, there's never thousands of people coming through the village, but the people who do come are really interested. They stay for a long time. They want to talk about map making and what goes into it. How long does it take to make a map? You know, tell me about this, tell me about that. And the good thing is we have the time to talk to these people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people come in, they know about us. Some people come in, never heard of us, a bit skeptical. And by the end of it, once they've held one and had a look and they understand what you're trying to do, they usually go away with something, or if not, just a bit of knowledge about map making in general. So
I guess like the most people that are listening to this, I would imagine, are some level of map nerd, you probably do this where you walk into a room and someone has an old map up on the wall, and I'm jumping back to a memory of like only last week when I went into one of my neighbors. He's an elderly fella in another apartment, and he has this old map of Antarctica up on his wall.
Yeah.
And instantly I was like, I want to talk to you about this map right now. Yes. And anyone who just appreciates maps, that's what they want to do. They just want to talk about it, because it's a story. You're looking at, one, a piece of art, two, something that's very informational. You're looking at history, you're looking at geography, you're looking at all these different things at once, but you're also using it as a, you know, as a reference for conversation, you know.
And I would say as well, you're looking at it and seeing possibility, which is kind of one of the key things I think we find is that, as you say, people love the art of a map. They love how it works. They love the detail. Some people understand it, some people don't. There's a lot of people in between, but ultimately they know it can give them something that they don't get in their daily grind, which is, you know, to stand atop a mountain, or, you know, to walk along a river path, or, you know, it's something different. And I think that's really key. And that's what we see a lot at Harvey Maps.
Yeah. So what got you into maps? Like, tell me the life story of Adam King. How did you go on this fantastic trail?
20 seconds. Yeah.
we got time.
No, it's so, I mean, I think, yeah, I mentioned earlier. So I grew up I was really lucky. I grew up in the Cotswold Hills area of England. So, you know, lots of rolling farmland, lots of rights of ways and places to go. And my parents were both really keen on the outdoors. So I had that going for me from a sort of really early age. They were both climbers and hikers. And I remember going camping a lot as a kid, and, you know, being shown maps and getting in, opening them up and looking at it and wondering what on earth was it. And I remember being in the Scouts and the Cubs and that kind of background. So I always had this sort of passion for map making and maps in general. Alongside that, come from a long line of artists. So my family, my mum was an art teacher, my dad was an art teacher, my dad remarried another art teacher. You know, the list kind of goes on, and I didn't really do anything with art. I kind of like it, but and then I did a degree at Nottingham University in sociology and with a bit of philosophy, and loved it, but I found it very hard to get a sort of career going after that. And so woke up one day and thought, right, what is it I like doing? And I thought, maps. Someone makes maps. Someone somewhere makes maps, and I'm going to find out. And this was 2004 or something like that. And I realized there was a course in Glasgow University. There's only a handful of courses in the UK that teach cartography of any form. Probably less now as well. It's probably a few closed, but this course has got a really strong heritage and tradition. And so, yeah, it was a year master's, went up there, loved it. Absolutely enjoyed every part of it. Got some work in Manchester, was my first job as a cartographer, working for a firm of architects and planners, doing their sort of support service drawings for all the planning applications.
Mm.
And one thing led to another. Left that job and worked for the British Waterways, the canals. Which was great fun. And then a job came up in Scotland at Harvey Maps about 12 years ago, and Susan interviewed me and gave me the job. So I joined as a cartographer in 2010, and not really looked back since. So Scotland's a great place to be. It's definitely home, I really like it here. So, and then you start as a cartographer, and the people come and go, and as a part of that as well, Susan and Robin were both, I mean, they were approaching retirement in 2010, and Robin retired first. I forget which year exactly, but around about 2017, I think. And then Susan wanted to retire in 2018, 19. We kept her going until 2020, and then I was fortunate enough to take over. So, and the company, as a result, is now an employee-owned company. So,
wow!
So it's quite a long journey from the little kid who opened maps in the Cubs to, you know, where are we? 35 years later, to be sitting in the central belt of Scotland, making these great things and.
That's fantastic. That's one of those stories of, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Hadfield, the Canadian astronaut. I remember reading his book, and he's a similar story of, but following down the path of wanting to be an astronaut. He just literally was sat watching the moon landing, and he was like, yeah. I want to be one of them. I want to be an astronaut. And cut to 30 years later or whatever it was. He's in the International Space Station. So I'm sure you can relate a lot to Chris Hadfield.
This feels a long way from being an International Space Station, but there are some weird and wonderful computer things in here. So,
they have space debris. You've got ghosts. So.
Exactly. At least one.
But that's such a fantastic story of like dedication to wanting a life in the outdoors and wanting a life with maps.
I was trying to find something that sort of aligned to me as well, you know, and I think it took a few years to get there. There was a few jobs I didn't really enjoy, shall we say, in between kind of university number one and university number two, and a little bit of traveling around the world for a little bit. But, you know, you kind of, I just realized, what is it that I actually enjoy? And I suppose this is my family always say this is my art. It's got a bit of science in there to keep me grounded, but this is my art. So,
but it is like again, I don't want to labour the point, but it genuinely is like when I'm proud to put a piece of a section of a map or an entire map up on a wall as a piece of art, because it's something. As I said, you walk into people's my neighbour upstairs, he has maps on his wall as pieces of art because they are. And there's so much to them, and I don't know if I necessarily understand lots of conventional art, you know, if a painting with like five colors like strewn across it. I'm not sure if I actually can understand it, but I can understand a map. I can understand the artistic kind of integrity behind that, but also the the other layers of information that are there too. So what goes into making a map? How do you make a map?
Well, you need some people. That's where you start. We've fortunately got a few of those. How does Harvey make a map? So we're considered, I suppose, quite traditional map makers still. We, given the end product being a printed sort of physical item, and the means by which we make our maps is also very traditional. So we're really unique in the UK. So obviously a lot of people will know of the Ordnance Survey. They probably should know of the Ordnance Survey if they've been walking. And hopefully a lot of people will have heard of Harvey Maps, but it's a really unique sort of situation to be in. So we don't obtain any Ordnance Survey data. We create all of our own data, which kind of people have asked me over the years, you know, why do you do it? I mean, sort of like, why do shops sell two different brands of jeans? You know, it's a bit of a preference for some people. But so if we're starting from that point, if we create everything, we have a team of photogrammetrists. So we buy in aerial photography, and we buy in hundreds of these things. Once we've decided on where we're going to make a map, and that is kind of, we then know how many aerial photos we need. And these guys, they simply load them into computers now. It used to be into really old kind of, you know, weird looking kind of big Bertha machines sort of thing. But now it's just a, you know, Windows boring PC. And they spend about 5 months, 6 months tracing every feature they can see from a bird's eye view. So, and they'll methodically go from, well, they call it a model. So all these photos get stitched together, and the photos need to overlap so that you can see them in three dimensions. So it's a bit of sort of trigonometry at the end. You've got known points on each photo, and you know the height of the camera. So with the camera. So you know you've got a triangle, and you just keep going along. And these guys, they spend, as I say, months just tracing roads, rivers, stream networks, paths, interpreting contours. All the contours are drawn, I say by hand, but you know what I mean by it. The word is, I suppose, manually. They're not automatically generated, which is what a lot of companies do now. So we get real sort of detail there and bespoke information on the land. And once the guys have done that, then they pass it to the cartographic team, and they spend maybe a week, maybe a couple of weeks, turning all these squiggles and all these lines, all this jumble of information into something that you and I would recognize, so that woodlands would go green and water goes blue and roads have thicknesses and campsites have little tent pictures and things like that. So, and then once we're done with that, when we're ready, we send a team off to the area, and they generally will stay for a week walking the key routes. So we do a bit of driving and checking around, but mainly we're looking to do the walking routes. So most of our maps are made for outdoor enthusiasts. So we got to make sure that we can't physically walk every path, but we'll go on the main route. So we know the routes up the mountains, or we know the national trails, for example, and they'll spend a week making sure that everything is sort of correct and good to go, because a map, I suppose, is as soon as you've made it, it's out of date. It's only as good as the photos you're creating the data from. And sometimes they can be 2, 3, 4 years old already. So, lots of, especially in Scotland where we are, lots of new deer fences go up, and they're very hard to see from above, obviously, unless the sun is kind of at a certain angle and you can see a good shadow of a fence post. You're struggling to see that from above. So, the whole process to make any kind of sheet map takes roughly about six months.
Okay,
And then we send them off to print, and we have kind of pretty high standards, obviously, as you can imagine, for the printing. Mm. There can't be much margin for error. But when they come back and we're happy, we then let everyone use them. So
that's interesting how like it goes from photographs, and I suppose I'm trying to fathom the
photogrammetry. That's it.
So the photogrammetrists, so they're literally tracing not by hand but in a very manual way. Knowing where the contour lines are going to be.
Yeah, it's a really skilled process. Yeah. And it's something I've never had a go at, because I don't think I'd be very good. But you need a certain type of eyesight. So not everyone can see properly in 3D.
Wow.
So anyone who joins us, it's a very small team. There's only two at the moment in the team. But anyone who's either interested in doing it or who joins us, we have to send them for an eye test so that they can be able to see properly in 3D. And the contours themselves, that's probably the hardest part of it, so I'm led to believe, is, so you've got this kind of, imagine you're looking, you remember those posters you used to get in the 90s where you'd look at it and stare at it and eventually it would jump out at you. I don't know what these dots. So they're kind of looking in that method all day. That's what their eyes are doing. They're looking at this sort of 3D world, and there's a little white dot apparently, which you have to set the dot at, say, let's just say for sake of argument, 200 meters in altitude above sea level, and that dot is locked at that level, and they then trace the land as they believe they're seeing it to draw a 200 meter line, and the dot floats above the land, or it can go below the land if their eyes aren't seeing it properly.
Right.
And so the skill is to be able to keep that dot on the land and trace around this 200 meter line. So practice is the key thing. And once you get it, it's one of those things, a bit like driving a car. Once you figure out the clutch and the accelerator, you're kind of fine. But
yeah,
you know, it would take me a long time. I think I've got decent enough eyesight, but it'd take me a long time, I think, to get to grips with what exactly I was trying to capture and how. So yeah, they're a pretty talented bunch. And
that would be the traditional way of doing it, I suppose, like having these photogrammetrists. Yes. Okay. If I learn one word today, it's going to be that.
Yeah.
So this is would this be the traditional way of doing it, or is the whole process traditional?
It's traditional, I suppose, in the computer era. And my colleague Pete, he's our senior photogrammetrist. He's been with us 30 plus years. When he came out of the army, the cartographic services in the army, he joined Harvey Maps, and he's been right through the process. So he was here before computers, when it was all what they call masking and scribing. So it was a painstaking way. They would have these huge kind of plastic style sheets, and they would trace things from the aerial photos as in a much older machine. And that would then they would have to recreate that onto this sort of plastic sheet. And if you got something wrong, there was no kind of control Z, you know, undo. It was start again. So
wow.
Now, so that's that phase. And then the computer came in, which obviously sped up lots of it. And so now it's as manual as I think and traditional as we can do. Because we control every line that we draw. So we don't let the computer generate anything from an algorithm, which I think that's the difference, I think. That's probably what I'm getting at between traditional and modern. The algorithm is still the human in control of the map creation at every step of the way. So there's so much data available now. You know, you may have heard of, say, LiDAR data, which is almost millions of these data points, which generate, we've done some tests, they generate really good contours, but they're just they're just not quite what we want in certain areas. Because we know what's important to the user when they're out in the outdoors. We know that, you know, that a little re-entrant for a stream or something needs to be exaggerated a little bit. So you get a bit of license to make the map appear the way we think it should to help mm-hmm. the user, the specific user in mind. So
I guess, yeah. So it, like, I suppose you're, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you're thinking always from the perception of the user. So a human eye is detecting what another human eye is going to see at the end of the day. Like you're using human abilities to also detect what a human is actually going to see. So they're kind of picturing what would be there if they were actually there on that part of the land.
I think that's exactly it. Yeah. We're able to use our experience and our knowledge of what's useful in the outdoors in order to create something that we know will help other people. And these people may or may not have the same experience. And so if we can, for an example, a computer may, we plot boulders. We plot large boulders that can be used for navigation. So not little rocks, but if it's a huge boulder and, you know, you're in the mist or the snow's falling and you see a big lump up ahead, we try and show that on the map. So whereas an algorithm just would miss that, or it would it might plot other things as boulders that we didn't want them to be, or, you know, sheep or something that move could be picked up, and that's happened before. Someone plotted a sheep as a boulder that moved. It's going back a few years, but these are the things you've got to sort of look out for, and then you can kind of change your mind and say, actually, that's not useful. You know, what we've done there, we need to, when they go out on survey, they'll say, actually, that's not really a navigation feature, that boulder, we'll take it off. But that one over there definitely is. It was just hidden by the crag that we couldn't see above.
Right. So, okay.
That's all the sort of phases coming together. And that's kind of what so we're specialized
So it is very, well, one, clearly it's very specialized, but also it's very team driven. And this is what you said at the start, that you need people. So you were saying roughly it's about a 6 month turnaround to go from getting the photographs in to actually a finished product. Yeah. So is that 6 months with everybody on board for this particular map set?
So if we had double the number of photogrammetrists, we could either do two 6 month projects at the same time, but given the relatively small team that we've got, we're a company of, say, 12 people, of which it's approximately half the staff are on the production side and half are on the administration, the dispatch, the marketing, that kind of set of finance. So it's not a massive team.
Yeah.
It's 6 months that we can only really, for new stuff, go as fast as the photogrammetry team. And so whatever they're working on, when they're working on something, the cartographers need to be doing other things. They can't just wait for those 5 months to get their 2 weeks of work. So we balance the work as best we can. Yeah. We've got lots of contract work, and there's all sorts of other things going on. But that's 6 months. So is pretty much, and that's for a sort of standard sheet size, whatever that means, can change. I'm trying to think in sort of square kilometers, but it's about 700-900 square kilometers of mapping of new data, roughly, is about 6 months worth of work. So, and in once we start, assuming everyone's okay and everyone's sort of, you know, we're not missing half a team or something like that, then in 6 or 7 months, we should have that back from the printers in order to put out to the public. So, yeah,
I'm definitely going down the business road of it, because I'm thinking of all the cogs that are turning and how, because I suppose the decision to go, okay, we're going to add on a new section here, you know, we're going to go after a new mountain range or a new area. Yeah. The decision to go and do that must be very weighted, and you're like, do we really want to do this? Because we have our 12 months finally kind of tuned out here of, well, we have to renew this section, we have to renew this section, and we've already committed to doing this. And then you've got all the other bits and pieces that you've got going on as well. I'm sure, you know, you do, I know you do a lot of work with mountain leaders, and you do work with like the NNAS and lots of different things like that. Yeah. So those decisions are very, very weighted.
To find juggling act at times.
Yeah.
So we've probably got a, we've got a sort of production, we've got a new title production probably set for about 3 or 4 years down the line. And the good thing is that we're not really working, whilst we do work to deadlines, we'd be nice to get the titles out when we can. We've got the freedom to be flexible. So if another big project just comes in out of the blue, it's only ourselves that are in control, and so we can pause or stop any project and say, right, actually we're going to divert everything onto this for 3 months, or so yeah, it can be a bit of a challenge. And generally whatever we have planned for the next 3 years will not look the same in 3 years time. That's probably the same for every business, you know, but especially in our case. So there's some sort of strategic decisions that we make from time to time in terms of, there's only so many kind of key areas that we want to do, and we're not really interested in mapping towns or cities. So the Ordnance Survey do that, they do it really well. So there's no real need for us to kind of get involved there. That would take about 10 months of our time as opposed to 6 months. We've got to be mindful of the business decisions and make sure that the sort of economics of it stack up favorably. But as we have sort of so many titles now, the strength of the series kind of pulls any new title along, if that makes sense. So not every title sells at the same rate. So we have popular ones and less popular ones, but as a series, it drives it forward, and that's your, I suppose that's where you'll know that's the brand and how you put it out there. So
absolutely. I want to talk to you about beer. Just before we start recording, we were talking about beer. You did a collaboration with a brewery. Do you want to talk about that?
We did, we've got some good friends at a brewery just based outside Edinburgh, called Top Out Brewery. And the founders of Top Out are a couple of German guys really, really into their climbing and their hiking. And they set up this brewery a few years ago. And I was sat in a pub one day in my local, and the little, I don't know the technical name, but the keg, I think they call it a keg clip. That's the bit of artwork you see on the pump handle. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful bit of contours, and all their beers are mountain themed, and they feature a route that goes up to the top of the whatever their chosen mountain is. So I thought, well, we'll get in touch and see if there's room to collaborate here. And you've got kind of a good blend of brewers who love the outdoors and love maps, and you've got map makers who just generally like walking and having a beer at the end of the day. So here we are, a couple of years down the line. It's just out. I think it's called Up and Dune, and it features a contour design of our kind of local. It's our kind of closest mountain, really, called Ben Leddy, which is just near the town of Callander, which is in the Trossachs National Park here. And I'm yet to try this beer, by the way.
I was going to say, I would imagine your fridge is full of it.
My mouth is watering at the moment. We're getting samples very early next week, I'm told. So I should be definitely having a pint or two of that.
And I'm curious, like, is this going to be sold in pubs or in retail? Or
It's available online now, I believe, at Top Out. So we can't sell it because we're not licensed to, but. We can certainly promote it. And I gather it's going to be in pubs around Edinburgh, and it's it's looking good. It's apparently a nice session ale.
I love it.
So there you go. That's
excellent. Yeah, I really hope to do international delivery because I want to definitely pick up a pack of them.
I'm sure we could. Sort of send one over to you.
I think the name is fantastic. It just ticks so many boxes. It's Up and Doon is the Scottish pronunciation of up and down.
Yeah,
it's the name. It's fantastic.
It's the village we were in, and it's our local place. So we had a good. We had a good chat with the whole team trying to get everyone involved in picking a name for this beer, and we had some. I can't remember any of the others. I'd have to dig them out, but there were all sorts of really creative phrases to do with beer and Doon and Harvey Maps. And anyway, it was a fun day at least. So
great. Well, yeah. Anyone who's in, so is it going to be national or is it going to be in just Scotland or around your local area?
I think they'll be in pubs in Edinburgh way and pubs around the central belt, but they definitely deliver. They've got a website and they can ship it. There you go. Yeah.
Well, this is not a platform to sell that, but I'm purely curious just for myself so I can pick up one. Yeah. That's what, like, it really, really interesting story of the history of Harrowby Maps, and I suppose your kind of diehard drive to get into work in Maps and live in the outdoors, and like topping all that out with a fantastic beer to put your name on.
That's it.
Is there anything else you wanted to kind of like dive into? Any kind of messages you wanted to send out to the podcast listeners?
Oh, I mean, if you've not had a look at our map layer, then please do so. I know Owen and the team have worked really hard getting our maps on this platform, and we're really excited to be on there. It's been live for a short while, but if you've not tried it, do so. Let us know what you think of our maps, and we hope to keep adding more and more titles. Little pockets that we'll send to Owen and the team to push out onto Hiker and give it a go and let us know how you get on.
It's been great having the layers on the platform already. Like I know Pete, our in-house and probably reluctance GIS expert has taken on the job of getting these layers on. And I know you've met Pete on a few calls to sort this stuff out, but. He's definitely kind of really enjoyed, albeit the stressful learning process, but he's really enjoyed kind of getting in depth with the maps. And now we can call him one of us. He is now a map nerd because of Harvey Maps.
He's graduated. That's it.
He is. Yeah. Yeah. No, this has been a fantastic conversation, Adam. And I'm sure we can.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam. Yeah.
Blab on for hours and hours and hours, and I'm sure we will definitely Absolutely. Come back and have another chat sometime soon. But thanks so much for your time and for coming on and having to chat. I look forward to using your maps again very, very soon. I already have my library full of Harvey maps, so put them to good use. And if anybody is using the Hiker app, the Harvey map layer is available on our Pro Plus subscription, but I'll save the selling to the intro. Adam, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming
on.
And speak to you soon.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. An interview that contains maps, hiking, beer, and astronauts. Like, if that's not up for some sort of interview of the year awards, then I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I really hope you enjoyed that one. As I said, all the Harvey Maps layers are available on Hiker on our Pro Plus subscription, so you can go and check that out on the app and on the website. And that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with another interview. Until then, happy trails.